For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another episode about the highs and lows of the world of non-league football. Recording a little later than usual this week, but I'm pleased to say my co-presenter has the stamina to be here. He's had a long day, and he's not tucked up with a duvet and a hot chocolate as a... he may well be if we're all on the shutdown in the next couple of weeks. But he, of course, needs no introduction, so maybe I should stop there. But I'm pleased to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Dave Anderson.
Good evening.
It is an evening.
It is an evening. It's been a long day for both of us, isn't it? It's going to be... If we could do with an Oscar after a performance tonight, because we're both tired.
we don't want thanks. We don't want plaudits. No. But yeah, it's been a long week.
It's been one of them days. Yeah, yeah. No, it's as you say, we need to hurry up, or we could be in here for 30 days. Or whatever it is.
I can update you that the Jibber Jabber chocolate box, which is famous, has been updated this week, just in case we do get locked in. There's a few things. This week, Monday lunchtime's release of the Gaffer Tapes. Great Gaffer Tapes with Gary Johnson that you recorded just ahead of the weekend.
Yeah, and, it was mad. It was just one of them that, you know, obviously he needs no introduction to non-league or football league. But I actually went through the clubs he'd been at. I try not to go too in-depth into who they are and what they are, but my best mate is actually his cousin, so, and I know his family. I know his family a lot better than I know Gary, truth be told. But I knew after 5 minutes that an hour wasn't going to be long. And it nearly took him an hour to go through his career, his teams. But I sort of thought the best way to do it, Tim, was not to rush it. So we sort of got halfway through his career when, and listen, they're busy people. He gave me an hour on a Friday night in the hotel, and I promised him it would be an hour. But after an hour, we were halfway through. So I said to him, look, well, we'll maybe try and do a part two. And at the moment, I didn't realise that they're actually at Bournemouth on Saturday. So this is Thursday night. I'm hoping to go and see him in a different hotel tomorrow night. But I've sort of sent my feelers out to see if he's okay with that. Who wants 2 hours with me 2 weeks in a row? Do you know what I mean? So that would be the idea, to get part two, because there is an awful lot of stuff still to come up. But I thought it was really interesting because of the levels. He's managed at every level, and I thought he was quite honest at times.
Well, I was chatting to a couple of people who come up to me this week and said, you know, brilliant again, loving the series, and we would say that, but the, you know, it's nice when other people say that to us. And he just comes across as almost too nice to be a manager.
I don't, he's a lovely guy, he's a nice guy, but he's got a streak in him, and he spoke about it, and he was honest about it as well. Because when I said to him, there's one part of the interview, I said, you know, in your you've a reputation for being a fiery guy earlier in your career, and he actually says, a more fiery guy, which how many people would admit to that? But he was very honest about that, and he also said the thing I found, there's lots of stuff in it, but there was one thing he said. I asked him how many people he wouldn't have the time of day for, and I'd said in my life, my football life, there's maybe two or three over 30 years that if I seen him in the street, you know, and I'd have him by the throat or crossover, you know, that two or three out of 100 million ain't bad. I think that's about as many as I've been through. But he said none, and that sort of told me a bit about the man. You know, he doesn't hold grudges, and at the moment we're all fiery and we all do, but he moves on, and he's got an incredible record. It's worth a listen. When I say that, I genuinely don't mean my part of it. I genuinely think it's worth a listen, because it's 1 hour of a guy who's managed for 30 years at every level and been a one game away from the Premiership, you know. So yeah, great for me. Loving the series, loving doing it, you know.
Well, I think it summed up everything that we were trying to achieve with the series as well. Mm. That just show the human side of managers, which you're often saying you end up repeating the same soundbite. It's not on purpose. Yeah. That's just because normally you get maybe a microphone or a recording machine shoved under your nose just as you've just been tonked 4-0 when you don't really want to be talking to anyone, let alone a reporter. And that's so you end up with the stock phrases and that sort of thing. And the gaffer tapes, I think, has really allowed the managers to talk about and get some things off their chest, which has been good. Yeah. But also, learning about managers are human and they have real lives as well.
Yeah.
And while and Gary's very honest, while he's going through some of the hardest things that anybody ever has to face, he's still out there.
Yeah, and hit it. Which is amazing that he kept it away from everyone about his heart condition. We don't want to tell everybody about the show. Listen to it and you'll find it. I think there's that. And I think the big thing about it is that I always remember when we, come back 100 years, when we were doing this on the BBC, and I don't know, we changed something, and Kaz says, I want the show to breathe. Do you remember? That was how we'd sort of, it was explained, let it breathe. So this is like letting every manager breathe. It's letting them talk as long as they want to talk, whereas we're all used to that 20-word answer nearly, and this lets you have a 200-word answer if you want. And that's why I didn't want to rush this to the end. I thought I'd rather have half a show or half his career for the show than squeeze it all out in a normal way. So we're more or less halfway through, and as I say, hopefully We'll get the second half for the next time we put one out.
And plenty more to come.
Well, let's see.
So let's talk to a club who are top of the world, top of the Isthmian League Southeast, with games in hand, enjoying 1,000-plus attendances and looking good all round. Let's hear more from the man in the know. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Chief Executive at Hastings United, Billy Wood.
Hi, guys. Great to finally be on the show. I've been a fan of for many years.
Well, that's
good, you're easy, please.
Yeah. we like feedback like that. I mean, Benny, let's start with those attendances. I'll hover on a recent bad day at the office, I guess. You lost 3-0 at home to Ashford, your title rivals, but that was back at the start of February. But you had a crowd just shy of 1,200 people. This is Step 4 football, and we talk about Step 4 football in the Northern leagues. Yeah, maybe they suggest that their crowds are slightly bigger. In the Isthmian League, it's never been really blessed with the biggest crowds around, but 1,200 people, Step 4, that's impressive stuff. What's been the magic formula for that?
Well, I came to the club in September. I moved over from Step 5 Club, Eastbourne United. With Hastings being my hometown club, it was, to get the offer to come over and take charge, I couldn't really turn it down. But when I came in, I looked at things at the football club and I looked at the connectivity locally. Ultimately, to be successful in any level of football, you have to connect your local community. And the club, has been around for a long, long, long period of time and, always teetered around the 250, 400, sometimes that push 500, for the gate mark. And the game before I came in as chief exec, I think it was Whitehawk at home and it was 405 people. And my thing was, I believe with Hastings, with over 100,000 people living in the area of Hastings, the club should be able to attract 1%. And with that, what we've gone and done is we've just emphasise what we're doing at the football club. Chris Agatha, our manager, is playing incredible football. It's a beautiful passing game. So we just make it very clear what we're doing. We put highlights up. We market the club locally and on social media. And it's just kind of gone from there. I couldn't say it's a magic formula. It's just, modernising non-league football. Understanding that the days of just putting a fixture list in your local newsagent and hoping that your board outside your ground will attract people have gone. You've got to attract the next generation and the next generation need to be, they need to be, targeted because there's so many other ideas and things out there for entertainment now that you've got to make it a bit more sexy for them to come through the gate. And we've done that and the crowds are going. And not only are the crowds going up, but the crowd participation is there as well. It's not like there's, you say we had 1,200, but, you know, on regular now we're getting over 700, you know, every game. And it's not, you know, a quiet atmosphere. People, you know, getting involved in the chants, you know, getting behind the players on the pitch. And then the players are showing their appreciation after every game by going out and, you know, applauding home and away the fans. And I think that's the form there, is the connectivity of the club to its local community again.
But, yeah, Billy, I've played with teams down there for many years, Hastings, and it was always one of them places. I think when you go to the seaside, any of them, there's always a bit of an atmosphere. I always used to enjoy it, old school. Like, but this is different. You know, when I went there, I'll go back, maybe Hendon, it would be around about 400. I went with Wimbledon, yeah. It was obviously a lot more because of our travel and support. But I've gone to watch Wilson four or five times, who are top of Conference South. Their gate's 1,200. So that's what we're talking about. That's the difference we're talking about. So to nearly triple the average gate, I think is, you'll be a sought after man, let me tell you, if you've got that formula. And has that coincided with the run of form to take you to the top of the league? Is it gone hand in hand, or?
Well, I think, you know, I think any person marketing a football club has to use their tools, right? And we, on the pitch, are fantastic, and we have hit a great run of form this season. But saying that, the club were a top two club last year too. So I wouldn't just put it down to what we're doing on the pitch. It's a great advertising for us to be able to push what we're doing and really embed our culture of who we are as a football club. But I think it's more the case that people are buying into who we are now as a club and buying into Hastings. You know, like I say, I'm a Hastings local. You know, whilst I wasn't born in the town, I consider Hastings my hometown, being here for most of my life. I look at it like this. It's about understanding what the local, you know, individual needs, and why is their town, why is their club more important to them than going off to watch a league club? You know, why are we getting people that are Arsenal season ticket holders now coming to Hastings United? You know, I guess why, because the Arsenal form isn't so good, but, you know, coming to six and seven games on the bounce rather than taking their season ticket and going up to the Emirates.
What's the answer? What are they saying to you people? Why are they saying they're coming?
Because they feel the positivity around the club again. You know, whilst I don't want to knock any previous regime of the football club, because the club's been through ups and downs for the last 20-odd years. And, you know, the club just not really... It's kind of been a little bit... Let's just roll it back a little bit. Before I was at the club, the way I would always see the football club is it felt a little bit distant. Like, it was... I wouldn't say an old boys club, but it was like, this is our day out and you're privileged to be here.
Yeah.
And the way we've kind of turned it is, look, this football club's for all ages. You know, let's actually engage and make it interesting. Let's make sure that we have mascots for every game. Let's make sure, you know, how silly as it sounds, but having the club mascot, shall I say, like the seagull thing that we have going around. Our seagull thing, that's how great I am at marketing. But, you know, having someone in that costume and having them go around the ground, create an atmosphere. You know, put smile, have people smiling. You know, I drive into the ground, I make sure that when I'm at the ground, I walk around, coronavirus or not, I'm walking around shaking everyone's hand, you know, engaging with the support, young and old, you know, and making them know that we appreciate what they're doing at the football club. And I think sometimes going on that ground level and being transparent and talking to the fans and letting them know what you're doing and why you're doing it, and, you know, having that passion rather than turning up, going into the ballroom, staying in the ballroom, watching the game, having a drink in the ballroom, then going home. I think that's the difference. And that's the thing you have to do at this level of football. You have to make the public believe and feel the passion that you have. And when they feel that passion, and that's not just me, that's the whole board that we have at the football club. If we're showing that passion to our volunteers that are giving up their time for free to run our tea bars, to steward our ground, which is, you know, as you know, David, a lovely old beautiful ground.
It is,
you need match day staff.
Yeah.
They're giving their time. The least I can do is give them a smile and say hello. and know their name. I think that's the difference. I think the club of, I have people turn up to the ground now saying it's a different club. So, you know, and I can't put my finger on it and say that it's me, but all I can say is that I've brought my energy in the sense that I believe, you know, being positive is the way you get things done. You know, I've heard it, and I heard it at the previous club I was at, from the committee. This is not how we do football. No, you can't do this. Or, no, this is not how it's meant to be done. I'm not a big believer in that. I'm a big believer in how you get things done. And that's just not just on match day, but with my staff and, you know, with my manager. You know, we always talk, and it's never a no. It's a, okay, but how? How can we make this happen? How can we get that player over the line with the budget? How can we, you know, make sure that you've got the facilities that you need to progress up out of this league? You know, it's never a negative. I don't believe in negatives. And, you know, don't get me wrong, you have to monitor things, and you have to make harsh decisions at times. But it's always done for the benefit and the positivity of the football club. And I think that's what connected the local town to the club again.
Yeah, absolutely. I've wrote a couple of things down. The first one is you said very early on your statement that you've listened to people. I always find that's a reasonable way forward. And it's and people go, well, of course, it's amazing how many football clubs don't listen to their fans or the people who walk in the gate. So I've actually wrote listen and I've ticked it off. But the other side of the coin for me is being a football manager and sort of the dinosaur is you've now got momentum with you. You're top of the league. You've tripled the gate. Promotion is a must for you now, Billy, is it not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I even said it earlier. Someone said to me today, you know, and this is bold for me to say, I guess, because we've still got 10 games to play, but someone said, you know, I hope we get promoted. And I said, there's no hope in goal. We will get promoted. And
did Chris know you said that? Because if I was your manager, I'd be pulling you into the office, you know.
You know, me and Chris have a fantastic relationship. Yeah. And I think that kind of goes down to the point of, you know, getting promoted. Me and Chris talk every day. He's the football man. He picks the team. He signs the players. You know, I'm there to support him. Yeah. You know, whether I agree or disagree on selection is irrelevant. It's all about him. He's paid to do that job. And I have full faith in him. And as a club, we make it, it's our job to make his job easier. So when I say that, it's like, you know what? I'm not here to make it hard for him or be negative or be able to power play. I want him to succeed. I want us to succeed. So if we both want the same thing, it should be pretty easy to make happen. So like, we, you know, when I say that, we talk a lot. You know, we had a 23s game on Monday up at Phoenix Sports. You know, I went along to the game. Chris did. We travelled together, and I think that's the relationship that's really helped, is that we've got a bond in the sense that we both want to achieve great things in football, and Hastings United is the club that we can do that at.
And I've just been ticking, we've always a league table in front of us because we're not that clever, you know, we need to have a bit of homework. And I mean, I'm just ticking off, and Tim will tell you, I've been to more or less every ground in the league. I've played against every team that's in your league. In fact, I played against Cray Valley last year in the final of the Vaz, and I thought they were an exceptional football side. You know, I thought they were an exceptional football side. So, you know, to be top of the league, saying you're playing expansive football with Cray, knowing about them what to do, you know, that's a big league now. All of a sudden, there's big sides in there. You know, Whiteleaf, Whitehawk, you know, VCD, Keith McMahon, we all know well. You know, you go through Burgess Hill, Sittingbourne, big sides. Ramsgate, you know, look at what they are as well. So I think for you to do what you're doing is excellent. So okay, we'll give you promotion, eh? Let's go. We'll just chuck it at you and go, you've got promotion. where does it stop? Because you've now effectively you're pulling in Conference South gates. Is that where you're looking to go as quick as you can?
Well, you know, you say that about the gates. With the gates now, on average, you know, we've overtaken Lewis and Eastbourne Borough as the the best supported team in East Sussex. You know, it depends where you say Brighton are. Are they West Sussex or are they East Sussex?
we'll call them West Sussex for now.
But yeah, for the argument's sake, that they're West Sussex. Yeah, we're the highest, you know, the best supported team in East Sussex, which as a county is huge. Yeah. So we've got, you know, I think the club previously was always thought a little bit too small time in the sense of worrying about what's behind. I look very much in the future and look forward. And I think, you know, looking where Eastbourne Borough are, you know, National League South, right, they're not having the greatest of the seasons. But we've got to be looking at, if we're the highest supported team, we have to be up in that league. Yeah. And, you know, how we get there, we get there. But I believe we will. And I believe that not only do we have the following to get there, but we also have the desire to make that happen.
What about, sorry to interrupt you, Billy, but what about, you say you've got this, you've got that, and I agree with that. What about investment? Have you got investment to go in to take you? You know, there's a big old ground. Are you going to invest in the ground, the squad,
new ground coming up?
I can't say too much as the application is pending, but, we're looking to move ground within the next 2 years. You know, it's been something the club has been looking at for a long period of time. With the current ownership scenario that we're in. But it's not happened. The previous plan kind of fell apart. But the new plan and the new site has been earmarked. We've been working a lot with the local council to get the application right. And we feel very confident that we will be moving to a new multi-million pound stadium, not just a stadium, but a sporting complex that will really drive our club forward in all aspects.
Within the community as well.
And that's number one. When I came in, the number one thing I said to the local press was, we need to be leaders in the community. And that still stands. And with the new plan project, it takes us into that spectrum. It's not just about football, it's about other sports too. And it's also about, the local community and providing, opportunities opportunities in all areas to really kind of engage and, give something back to Hastings. And that's not far off. The application is not far off at all. We feel that we have the support to make this happen. And it's something the club needs. Well, the ground is very old now. It's 100 years old this year. And it's the older it gets, the more it becomes more expensive to maintain.
It's a bit like us in here.
Well, that's the point I was going to make, Billy, because week in, week out, we talk about what does non-league need? It needs some young blood, the ability to appeal to young generation. And I don't think I'm giving away too much here, but you're considerably younger than myself and Dave Anderson.
Your ground's younger than me and Tim. but I think it's a great story, and I've hogged the interview, which always lets you know I'm quite interested. But I think it's a great story, Tim. You've put down there yourself, and I like the old ground. Don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking it, but I think, if you can get a new complex and keep this momentum's massive, and to get them sort of gates, I think you've got it all in your hands, and to be fair, delighted for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's been great, Billy, and I love your positivity, and it's something that we share, that's what non-league needs. It needs these great stories and that sort of thing. But you did touch on it, and I've been there when I first got involved with my club, when you're the young gun with new ideas and that sort of thing. How much opposition has there been from sort of some of the older brigade? Have you won everybody round, or is there still a few people that you maybe need to get to buy into the project?
To be completely frank, when I came in, unfortunately, I'll be completely transparent about it. I came in and three directors did resign. Maybe because the age thing, maybe it was a case that a younger guy coming in to run the club from top to bottom. Maybe it was a case that didn't want to answer to a 30-something-year-old. I don't know. But they resigned, and it kind of left me in a moment where I had to, regroup, make sure the board was strong, and we've done that. And, I thoroughly thank, the owners of the club and my current directors, Pat, my vice chairman, Hayley Commercial and Joe in events, and think that we've kind of come together to, you know, and shown unity.
Yeah.
I think at first coming in, yeah, you're going to, I'm a young lad, you know, you're going to get that thing of, oh, does he know what he's on about? And I think, you know, if you look and you go around a lot of these boardrooms, you know, and that was one thing I hated. I hate going into these boardrooms. It's really stuffy and it was, you know, a cup of tea and, you know, a stern look. And I'll go in and I go, oh, yeah, you know, I'm, you know, the chief of the papers. Oh, you run the club. You know, I get, you know, sometimes I get those weird looks because I've not got grey hair and, you know, and I've not been in the game for 50 years that I shouldn't really be running the football club. But I think...
I'm starting to dislike you.
Yeah, no, certainly.
I've got plenty of grey hairs now. No, I think it's good. I think it needs it. It needs it. Football needs a bit of this.
Well, it's that thing as well that we talk, you know, almost most weeks that non-league clubs need to be businesses nowadays. Yeah,
yeah,
it's a passion project and you know, we've got the volunteer base and they need to buy into it. But the club needs it. You can't be hemorrhaging money every week because it's no good for anybody. We've spoken to clubs up and down the country that have brought in chief executives, and it does seem to work. It does just it gives someone with a strategy or a reason to create a strategy from the outset, just to change things up and you know, bring in your ideas that you've gained in other fields or away from football and bring those in. And you know, I don't think anybody can really knock the success that it's brought you.
Well, no, yeah, and I'm going back to the comment about, you know, to winning people over, you know, I remember my first game coming in as you know, as the chief exec in our boardroom. I didn't really like it felt really dull and, you know, it felt very like an old boys club, to be completely honest. And I didn't like that. So what I did is I made sure that all the mascots, going onwards forward, all the mascots and their families were welcome in the boardroom. I've opened up the ballroom a bit more, so it's a bit more vibrant. You know, it's a mixture of ages. It's, you know, it feels like football. And football, for me, is for everyone. And a ballroom should be representative of that. And I feel that's what we've done at our club. And I would urge a lot of clubs to do it. You know, I guess sometimes people are scared of new ideas. You know, they're scared of their positions being tested or you know, they have their own motives for running football clubs. You know, I've never really ever been afraid of my own position. If someone told me right now that they said to me, Billy, Hastings United in 5 years could be in League Two professional football, getting gates of 5,000 every game at the club, running and debt free, running, you know, doing everything that you dreamed of, but you had to leave the club today, I would leave. And I think that's the difference sometimes. I think some people aren't there genuinely for the football club, but they're for their own life.
Yeah.
My thing is simple. I've come in to do a job at this football club, but if someone told me that job could be done without me and guaranteed it, then, you know, it's not about me, is it? It's about delivering a real community football club to the town of Hastings because it deserves it. It's a huge town, you know. It's Dover. It's Weymouth. It's that sort of level. And we need to be there. And you know, we're pushing for that every single day, you know. And I'm very fortunate that we have a great manager that sees the same vision as I. I'm very fortunate that we have incredible volunteers that put in the hours that they do. And to say that, you know, winning the old boys over, I think I have. You know, I make sure I...
I'd like to think so.
You're singing a great song and it appears to be creating a symphony of success around at Hastings United. Billy, we'll have to let you go because you've probably got various things that as a chief executive of a football club needs to do. But it's been great talking to you. It's been great hearing what's been going on there and what's coming ahead as well. And it looks like Dave and I might need a trip to the seaside in the coming few weeks.
Pop down and you can see what our boardroom's really about.
Love it.
Thanks for joining us on the non-league show, Billy. Thanks. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, guys.
So we hear much about fixture backlogs with the weather, but our next guest is probably in a fairly unique position, as this weekend his side have two games, not Saturday and Sunday, not even an AM and PM game, but two games at pretty much the same time, and one home and one away. They play in the North Caledonian League up in Scotland, and it's a welcome to the Non-League Football Show to manager at Orkney FC, Charlie Allway.
Hi there, how are we doing? Yeah, good, good.
We're good. Now, it's let's set the scene, I suppose. It's Thursday night. You've just finished training to come and talk to me. What's the weather like up there at the moment?
Absolutely atrocious. So it's been pouring and we're driving rain tonight. And me and Paddy, my assistant, have just been shaking our fingers, literally, so before we could make this call, get the blood flowing again. So it's poor conditions, and unfortunately, that's what's got us in this situation. It's been a sort of wettish February in memory, and we've struggled to get fixtures played due to the wet conditions and our location, which means we have to travel by ferry. Either we have to travel by ferry or the opposition to get here. So if the weather's poor, then obviously we're more liable to cancellations than most other clubs. So that coupled with some good cup results this year, we've won a cup and won a couple of games in another cups. We've had six cup victories for the season. That coupled with the bad weather has meant we're way behind with our league fixtures. And so the solution that has been come up with for Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've just touched upon it there. I mean, we talk to managers week in, week out about the difficulties they face, you know, players being able to get time off work to get to games and that sort of thing. But you face that additional issue of, you got early kickoffs as well on Saturday because you have to allow the away team to get a ferry home. You are remote, and that must be, play havoc with your team selection anyway. How are you going to cope on Saturday when you've got two teams to select?
Well, we've got a very committed group of players, and each away game is basically a 14-hour commitment, an early start and a late get back. So obviously all of our opponents have to do that once a year. We have to do that on average 12 times a year, or 12 times a winter. So it's a big commitment, but if you want to play competitive football or any competitive sport and you live in Orkney, then travel is a big part of achieving that ambition. And so we've got a big squad of very committed guys. They understand we're going to need a squad. You know, with that level of time required, there's always one or two guys that can't make it. And so we've got a big squad, and that, in some ways, that has helped with it this weekend. We're effectively fielding. We're not fielding an A and a B team. We're splitting the regular training squad, and then we're supplementing that on the bench with the next crop of youngsters and a few retirees from a year or two past that are sort of dusting the boots off. We've also got four goalkeepers, so we've got a couple of keepers in each squad for Saturday. So we would expect to have sort of 14, 15 players in each squad, but none of those are players that aren't familiar with the club, either a senior level, normal level, very recently retired players, or 16, 17-year-old lads that are coming into the bench. So we're pretty well set.
Well, we talk to managers every week, and that sometimes they talk about the difficulty of holding on to a squad to be able to get them to play enough games in competitive football. It sounds like you've got the right solution there. Play two games on the same day.
Well, certainly, yeah, certainly it helps. It helps. It's a pretty unusual solution, and it's certainly not one we sought. You know, we normally there's plenty of time to get our league completed. You know, the ideal deadline is Easter, but we're really up against it this year, and you know, we're really keen. I mean, we're three or four games behind the rest of the contenders for the title, and you know, we really need to get. Mate, otherwise the games aren't meaningful, you know. If you're so far behind, it's very difficult. So now the guys are really up for it, and we've got good strength in depth. We've got good competition for places, so it's not like we're overbalanced with defenders or attackers. It's a nice balanced group. So we're as well prepared, we think, as we could be to face something like this.
Yeah, and You mentioned you've got the players there, and your assistant as well. Have you tossed a coin as to who's going home and who's going away to prepare?
Well, certainly, Yeah, so of course I'm going away. So I've got an assistant, Paddy Kirkpatrick, and then we've got a coach, Paddy Hiley. So the two Paddies are staying at home with the team, and I'll lead the team away. And the captain at the start of the season unfortunately broke his leg, so he's out of action, but he'll assist me away. So again, we've got good resources in terms of backup, because there are always games that some of us can't make for work commitments or whatever. So you really can't exist on a threadbare management team or playing squad. You know, it really is a big community effort, and we've got a depth of talent up here, and that talent is very committed. So we're very fortunate to be able to play in a league that takes so much time and effort to compete in, but we're absolutely thrilled we can do so.
Yeah, that certainly, there doesn't seem to be a local Orkney accent. How come you're there?
Yeah, no, I moved up from the Hartsbeds border. I'm a Luton Town fan. And I moved up here sort of 16 years ago. I work for Royal Mail. I'm a Royal Mail manager here in Orkney. And I came up here at the sort of tail end of my career, football-wise, and took up refereeing. And it kind of went from there. People sort of thought, well, he seems to be reffing and seems to quite enjoy being in amongst it. And then, you know, opportunities come your way if you throw yourself into the jobs that no one else wants to do, I identified, and that's it. But to be honest with you, there's a huge groundswell of football passion, ability and commitment in Orkney. It just happens to be that you know, I'm the one that doesn't mind putting himself forward. Most Orkanians are a little bit more reticent and shy away a bit from being the front man, so they need someone. But that's all I am. I'm just a front man there. There's a huge amount of talent and commitment here that would carry on without an idiot like me running around in the freezing rain on a Thursday night. So it's all good.
The North Caledonian League is not officially part of the Scottish pyramid, but it's an important part of the non-league world in Scotland.
It is due to become part of the Tier 6 pyramid next season. That's the plan. So it's the teams along the northeast coast of Scotland, if you can picture Inverness, the John O'Groats. So it's the teams, the likes of Invergordon, Goldsby, Tane, Thurso, who am I forgetting? I don't want to forget. Helmsdale, Bonnybridge. So it's those towns all up the east coast of Scotland. And so we play against them. And we're a fairly new club. We've only been going since 2002, and we've only been playing in the league sort of 5 or 6 years. So it's a fairly new venture for Orkney to play against those Scottish teams. But we managed to win the league a couple of years ago, and that was the first Scottish Island team to win a league title. So we certainly enjoy it. We're competitive, and the North Cali League next year is going to get Tier 6 status. So that's exciting, and that's capturing the imagination of the local football world here as well.
Mm. And you mentioned the Jock Mackay Memorial Cup final winner back in November. You've got those games in hand, hence this weekend. Are you still gunning for the title this year?
We need a result to go our way, but it's still a possibility. So we've played 10 league games. We've won 6, drawn 2 and lost 2. So were we to win all our remaining 6 league games, and we need Invergordon and Thurso to draw or drop a point, or drop one result each, that would give us the opportunity for it to be in our own hands. We still have to play most of the top sides in the running, so we're not completely out of it, but we're not favourites this year. It's a couple of years since we won it, and this year it's a 5-way tussle between Goldsby, Thurso, Invergordon, Tane and ourselves. So it really is tight and exciting, and as with any club and any manager, we just want to take it as deep into the season as we possibly can. Every must-win game is an entrance to another must-win game, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the club's fairly young in terms of football clubs. Yes. Are there any die-hard fans that haven't missed a game yet that have now got this dilemma this weekend?
Well, no. In terms of the fans, the fans tend to be fairly mature, because it's a huge, you know,
it's a thing about non-league football. We talk about it every week. But all fans of non-league football are mature, even the young ones, aren't they?
Yeah, I suppose so. So, and what tends to happen is if somebody comes to more than three or four games, they very quickly get given a role in the club, whether it be on the committee, the kit man, the sponsorship guy or whatever. So that team will actually remain fans very long. They just become part of the family quite quickly. So we do have some diehard fans, but I think given the state of the weather and the maturity of the fans and the situation going on in the rest of the world at the moment with you know what, I think the sensible solution would be for the players to travel this weekend and our fan base to stay at home. So I don't think we'll be taking a big fan base down to Helmsdale on Saturday night.
Well, and knowing what the weather can be like up in Orkney, I think any fan is fairly diehard anyway. And It certainly sounds like a competitive league, and I'm sure they're enjoying the football. And Charlie, it's been great having you on the Non-League Football Show, and we wish you well in the two games. I mean, if you're going away with one of the sides, what time will you get back? Will it be the opportunity to if you've won both games, got 6 points on...
Yeah, so the plan is we obviously host the away team, sort of soup and sandwiches in one of our local hotels who sponsor us, so the home squad will be there, and that is about 3:30 in the afternoon that they'll get back there after their game. The players normally then stay around, socialise until the football results come in about 5:00. That's just what happens. We won't be back until 8:00 though, so those players will we've already talked about it, you know, they will sort of, if results go away, they'll stay in situ, enjoy the hospitality in the hotel, and then we'll meet up with them about 8:00. So if we have a good day, it'll be a large group of happy players at about 8:00 on Saturday evening.
Well, we wish you well with it, Charlie. Thanks again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Cheerio.
So let's round off the show and head on over to Non-League Paper Towers and welcome back to the Non-League Show. It's senior writer at the Non-League Paper, David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. Now, let's start with the managerial changes that's been going on there this week. I suppose let's chat with the news of John Steele stepping down at the end of the season at Maidstone. No real surprise there.
Yeah, it's, obviously, John Steele went there after his time at Barnet. You know, it had initially been said that after his time at Barnet that he was retiring, but he sort of quickly returned to the game at Maidstone. Where he's been head of football, Hakan Hayrettin's been head coach, and maybe it probably hasn't gone the way they would have liked. They're obviously still in a good position to still finish in the playoffs in the National League South, but maybe they would have liked a bit more of an impact. I'm not sure, but nonetheless, he's decided to stand down this summer. Obviously, John Steele's very much a non-league legend, really, isn't he? You know, he obviously has history with Maidstone taking them into the Football League 30 years ago, and maybe sort of, you know, wanted to try and have a go at doing that again with the club. But like I say, haven't quite worked out that way. But you know, now it's time for Hakan Hayrettin to step up solely in charge of the club next season and see how they go.
Yeah, what do they call it? Succession planning. Mm. In any other business, it's the perfect solution, isn't it? You've had someone alongside you, it understands the ropes, understand the players, and hopefully Hakan should be able to just carry on and maybe help the club push back further up the ladder.
Yeah, I think that was always the case, like you said in the first part of the discussion. You know, it was always sort of the way I think that eventually Hakan would take over the baton and be in charge. You know, it's difficult for a first season back in National League South to try and bounce back straight away and win promotion. Like I said, still, so it was a good chance of doing that. But I think maybe now the foundations are in place. John Steele's helped put down with a lot of talented players there at Maidstone. I think they can push on whatever happens this season.
Yeah, and if we've got John Steele, one of the most experienced men in non-league. One man fairly new to the job is Robbie Simpson. And after a caretaker spell at Chelmsford City, he's been given the job permanently.
Yeah, that's right. As we know, obviously, Chelmsford have sort of had a bit of difficulty in appointing their new manager. They put out an advert, really, calling for managers to come and be interviewed for the position. Obviously, there was the saga of Gary Hill, who seemed very much in line to be appointed and then eventually wasn't. But in the meantime of all that, Robbie Simpson has been steering things. And I guess when you pick up results as a caretaker manager, it can often be difficult for the club to say thanks, but no thanks. And ultimately, the results that they've got and the progress and the signs that's been shown under his reign have clearly impressed the Chelmsford board, and he's got the permanent role. So, you know, you've got to say fair play to him. It's obviously a difficult position to come in, to, you know, coming into a club as caretaker manager. But, you know, fair play to him for seizing that opportunity and for being able to take the role.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, there's been lots of discussion around, you know, who could be the replacement. And he's just got on with getting the job done and getting those results. And we quite often, you know, just glibly say, you know, management's all about is a results business. But he's proven it is.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's always an opportunity, I think, for caretaker managers. You do see it quite a lot, to be honest. You know, you look at John Pemberton at Chesterfield, another recent example, obviously getting the permanent job based on the results that they've got. It is a really good job for a really good chance for managers to get in the door, really. And effectively, that's their job interview, isn't it? You know, there's clearly no better audition than showing exactly how you work and how you're able to improve things. And like I say, clearly he sees that opportunity and it's paid off to him. So fair play to him and good luck with him.
Yeah, we like to see managers being rewarded and clubs showing faith in them. There was some, away from the managerial stuff, there was some disappointing news from Bath City this week that their planning permission for the redevelopment of Twerdham Park has been turned down. And certainly looking at the visuals and, you know, talking to guys down at Bath, that I was amazed at what they were proposing there, considering that they've been talking about moving from Twerdham Park for years. And I was really hopeful that, you know, this development could go ahead. I'm not quite sure as to the reasons it was turned down, but it's got to hit everybody at the club, because they're all on a high with the new proposals. And I think they're going to take some time to absorb and I guess regroup and see where they go from here.
Yeah, it seems like a real blow for Bath. Like you say, the plans looked impressive. It was going to rejuvenate the sort of rundown Twerton area where the football club is, and also provide the club with the new facilities as such, which would help them raise finance. And a large part of it was 400 flats as well for students. Like I say, not quite sure the full details as to why the council turned down the planning submission, but yeah, it's not good news for Bath. I think as well, the development would have also helped them pay off some of the debt that's been collected over the years. And so I'm not really sure where the club will go now. It's one we're following up for Sunday's paper. But yeah, certainly not great news for Bath, given sort of, like you say,
I think the frustrating thing is we talk about week in, week out, you know, that the hurdles that clubs have to go through to, you know, just try and survive week in, week out. You know, you said about the, you know, mounting debts. They're not the only club that have got mounting debts, because it's difficult to bring revenue streams in. And it looked like this was a solution that ticked many, many boxes. We say about, you know, we've got to try and get the younger generation involved and engaged with their local football club. And as you say, this included some student accommodation that pretty much put that on their doorstep, and there was a strong affiliation that could have been created there. Hopefully they'll be able to go back, revisit this planning permission, maybe get it pushed through it in a slightly amended form. But yeah, when you do get clubs that are being a bit more creative and trying to think out of the box to do things in a different way, it just shows how difficult it is to run a football club.
Yeah, it does. I think football clubs also rely on councils and having council backing with things and being able to develop their football clubs. Like you say, it's so difficult for clubs to survive nowadays. Obviously, things like the coronavirus again all cause uncertainty in the next few weeks, I should think. And, you know, it's sort of a never-ending cycle, really, of things that clubs have to battle again.
It is. I mean, you mentioned the coronavirus there. We've just got through, you know, the storms, the wet weather, and a number of games being called off. And then we've got, well, this pandemic that's sweeping across the country. And, you know, it we're not going to be playing behind closed doors, certainly not this weekend, but you know it's going to affect the crowds, and also it's always the secondary revenue for clubs as well, because if people are going to go to a non-league football match and stand outside, they'll feel maybe less at risk of picking up something, but they may shy away from going into the club bar, and that's an essential part of a club keeping going, particularly during the months where we've lost games and revenue because of the weather.
Yeah, it is a concerning situation, obviously. I think it's also one that seems to be ever-changing. Obviously, today we've seen a lot of leagues in Europe postponed. We've seen Formula One in Australia postponed, and other sports as well, NBA, NHL, things like that in America. It is, you know, I'm not really sure what my opinion on it is on it at the moment, to be honest. Obviously, here, as things stand, the government say that they're not going to postpone sporting events, but it is something that, you know, they're not ruling out yet. You know, and what is the impact what's going to happen with non-league in that case? Because simply clubs at our level and also even in League 1 and League 2 can't afford to have games behind closed doors. Suspending the league is an option as well. Of course, that would mean a delay in playing fixtures. So then, you know, are you playing into May, June, perhaps even July at that stage? And then you've got to consider things like playoffs. Mm. Obviously, Wembley's booked for the playoff final and for non-league finals there as well. What will happen with that? Where, you know, do you then start going to neutral venues? There's sort of all these things to consider. But I think ultimately it's the effect it will have on clubs, because, you know, you can't be having non-league clubs playing behind closed doors, because a large part of a club's revenue is people coming through the turnstiles. And if you don't have that, then there's going to be a serious issue. There's obviously other things with players' contracts and players going away, and, you know, and May, as a lot of them do, is when the season ends. So, it's sort of difficult to say what will happen now. But it's certainly one we're going to have to keep a close eye on, and whatever does happen, it's certainly going to be something we probably haven't seen before.
Yeah, and I don't know, health's got to be the key priority and the reason that decisions are made, but there are so many knock-ons, aren't there, from that? We've already seen, you know, some leagues where they're behind on fixtures because of the weather that have applied to the FA to try and extend their season, and that's been knocked back. So, you know, we're saying about maybe, you know, postponing the leagues at the moment and then playing it later on. That would go against that as well. And as you say, the players just might not be around. There might not be the ability to play these games. And there's so many small things. I was talking to somebody earlier in the week, and, you know, saying that they were almost joking about playing behind closed doors, because, as we know, you know, there's the common comment of one man playing to one man and his dog, and the crowd might be 50, 60 at many grounds up and down the country, but there's another 40 or 50 people that still have to be at the club to get the game on. So even if they were playing behind closed doors, you've still got a large number of people that have to be there just to get the lights on and get things functional. So it's a bit like one of those textbook questions that you hope would never come up. And I'm probably quite pleased that I haven't got to make the decisions, really.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, really. Like you say, obviously, there's a lot more to putting a game on. Another thing is to consider, you know, what level, if you were to suspend Leeds, I mean, what level would you go down to in terms of crowds building up? Obviously, there's talk about in other countries not having events of where, you know, over where 500 people are gathering, 1,000 people. You know, certainly step one, step two, step three, you're getting crowds of 1,000. You know, you only have to look at South Shields against FC United this weekend. They'll probably be about 3,000 there at least, I imagine.
You've also got, when we're seeing the higher levels are cancelling their games for the numbers, as we've always said, like on non-league day, we encourage fans from clubs further up the pyramid to drop down to non-league when their club isn't playing. So you could almost see that the non-league clubs would then get bigger crowds, which would be, you know, perhaps great for revenue, but maybe goes against the whole idea of the other clubs having their games cancelled.
Yeah, exactly. I think whatever happens, it will be one of those things that comes down from the top. Obviously, there is the option for leagues to sort of take things into their own hands and sort of decide to suspend things now, as we've seen in other countries. Obviously, the government are saying that they won't enforce a suspension on sporting events, but it remains to be seen. I think for this weekend we're okay in terms of games being on, but as to what will happen next week and in the coming weeks when things looks like they'll probably get worse with the coronavirus, we wait and see.
We'll have lots of players running around their own front rooms because they can't make it to training and that sort of thing. So there's plenty to talk about this week. But what else can we expect to read about in this weekend's paper, David?
Yeah, so we've followed up the FA Vars draw. See, that was decided last Saturday with the two remaining quarterfinals being played. So we've followed up with all the clubs that are in the FA Vars. I've spoken to Great Wakering about their manager Steve Butterworth being suspended for 4 months due to a breach of betting, the FA betting regulations. There's also a nice piece Matt Badcock's written with Hungerford Town's Ian Herring, who are obviously in a sticky sort of situation at the moment, needing to feel a bit of a cash flow crisis at the club there, but they're really sort of rallying together and obviously had a great win last Saturday at Slough Town, who are flying in National League South. It's great to hear from Ian, who always says things as they are. And there'll be plenty more with some games being played as well.
Yeah, well, we look forward to reading all about it on Sunday morning and hopefully plenty of action to report to. David, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tim.
So that's it for this week. Thank you, as ever, to Dave Anderson.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thanks to all of our guests. A big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson at Dave Anderson 78. Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker. Myself at Tim Fuel. You can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via smart speakers, all good podcast aggregation sites. You can also look there for the non-league gaffer tapes and listen to this week's one with Gary Johnson and all the archive as well. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA. Thank you.